I'm Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today, an article written by Mark Tushnet, who runs a law firm, entitled "What the Constitution Says Berkeley Can Do When Controversial Speakers Come Knocking." He wrote this story in reference to an incident that occurred in Berkeley where conservative speakers were shouted down. He begins, "When a raucous crowd shouts down the speaker, a report from the Brookings Institution last week describes as troubling the fact that a narrow majority of students think that's okay. As far as I'm concerned, and I think as far as the First Amendment is concerned, it's okay. The jeers are simply people attending the rally, no different from the supporters who cheer the speaker." Mark, really? So you don't see any difference? Maybe this explanation will help make the difference clear. When those who attend the rally cheer, it is not with the intention of preventing the speaker from exercising his freedom of speech. They stop cheering to let the speaker continue. Those who jeer usually continue their disruption with the intention of shutting down the speaker's right to speak. The proof that I am right and you are wrong is in the fact that the protesters are protesting the right of the speaker to even appear. So they have already exposed their true motive, suppression of speech. You forgot about that, didn't you, Mark? He continues, "It just so happens that the opponents vastly outnumber, or at least outshout, the supporters." Mark, attendees of a speech are not there to outshout anyone. They are there to listen to the speaker. It is the protesters who are the ones shouting, with the intention of denying the speaker his rights. He wrote, "The opponents aren't the government, so even if they prevent the speaker from getting his message across, that's just too bad." Mark, I wonder how many of the readers would believe that if you gave a speech and a group of protesters shouted you down and your audience was forced to leave, that you would say, quote, "Well, that's just too bad," end quote. Show of hands, how many of you believe that would be Mark's reaction? He continues, "Or it's speech countering speech." Mark, it isn't speech countering speech. It's thuggery countering speech. I hope you are not going to try to defend the position that the protesters are exercising their rights to peaceful assembly. There is no way you will win that one, as you will discover when you review the definition of peaceful. He wrote, "I suppose you could say that the First Amendment gives the government a duty to make sure that the speaker is able to get his message across." Gee, Mark, you think? No, you don't think that. That would be correct and would ruin the streak of inanity you've got going. He continues, "But that's implausible as a general principle. I have a lot of things I'd like to have lots of people hear, but I can't dragoon the government into helping me get my message to them." Mark, what evidence do you have that these speakers dragoon the government into helping them speak? Take your time looking for it. I'll wait. He continues, "Maybe you can figure out why the government has a duty in the context of demonstrations, but not in the context of my political views. But I haven't yet seen anyone do so effectively." Mark, why did you insert a non sequitur into this article? The issue isn't governmental involvement in your political views. You were discussing protesters trying to prevent unpopular speakers from appearing, and then when those speakers did appear, shouting them down. Can you get back to the issue, please? He wrote, "That's not to say that shouting down a speaker is a good idea." Mark, it is a good idea from the perspective of the thugs. it often accomplishes their goal of suppressing speech that they don't like. It all depends on which side of the fence you are on. The slippery slope that you are ignoring is that someday it will be your opinion that gets shouted down. Maybe that is what it will take for you to defend everyone's right to free speech and not just those with whom you agree. Question, Mark. Do you think the intent of the Founding Fathers was to give freedom of speech to everyone? Or just those with the largest and loudest crowds, like those you have been supporting in this article? Now, referring to his previous comment about shouting down a speaker is not a good idea, he adds, I think it's sometimes worth doing, but not often. Mark, if shouting down a speaker is worth doing, why not often? How many times is it worth doing before it becomes not worth doing? More importantly, why is shouting down a speaker to prevent them from expressing a belief you disagree with worth doing? He wrote, and maybe universities should have unenforceable civility guidelines counseling against it. Mark, think about what you just wrote. Unenforceable? Then why bother? What's the point? And he concludes by writing, the First Amendment, though, doesn't say anything either way about heckling. Mark, while true, I'm trying to imagine your reaction and what actions you would take if I brought a group to shout you down every time you tried to give a public speech. Actually, I don't have to imagine. I would be willing to bet my grandma's secret stash that the article you just wrote would look very, very different. And now we move to the science segment. Today's story. The cancer death rate has dropped 25% since its 1991 peak. A steady decline over more than two decades has resulted in a 25% drop in the overall cancer death rate in the United States. The drop equates to 2.1 million fewer cancer deaths between 1991 and 2014. Researchers estimate that in 2017, there will be about 1.5 million new cancer cases and about 600,000 cancer deaths in the United States. The cancer death rate dropped from its peak of 215 per 100,000 in 1991 to 161 per 100,000 in 2014. The drop is the result of steady reductions in smoking and the advances in early detection and treatment. The drop is driven by decreasing death rates for the four major cancer sites: lung, a 43% drop among males, and a 17% drop among females. Breast cancer, down 38%, and prostate and colorectal cancers, both down 51%. Over the past decade, the overall cancer incidence rate was stable in women and declined by about 2% per year in men, while the cancer death rate declined by about 1.5% annually in both men and women. Also, there are significant gender disparities in incidence and mortality. For all sites combined, the cancer incidence rate is 20% higher in men than in women, while the cancer death rate is 40% higher in men. The gender gap in cancer mortality largely reflects variation in the distribution of cancers that occur in men and women, much of which is due to differences in the prevalence of cancer risk factors. For example, liver cancer, a highly fatal cancer, is three times more common in men than women, partly reflecting higher hepatitis C virus infection, historical smoking prevalence, and excess alcohol consumption in men. The largest sex disparities are for cancers of the esophagus, larynx, and bladder, for which incidence and death rates are about four times higher in men. Melanoma incidence rates are about 60% higher in men than women, while melanoma death rates are more than double in men compared to women. racial disparities in cancer death rates continue to decline. The excess risk of cancer death in black men has dropped from 47% in 1990 to 21% in 2014. The black-white disparity declined similarly in women, from a peak of 20% in 1998 to 13% in 2014. Although the cancer death rate remained 15% higher in blacks than whites, increasing access to care as a result of Obamacare may expedite the narrowing racial gap. From 2010 to 2015, the proportion of blacks who were uninsured dropped in half, from 21% to 11%, as it did for Hispanics, from 31% to 16%. And now we move to the final segment of the show, Famous Quotes. Today, Steve Poliak, born 1889, died 1955 at the age of 65. Poliak was an American neurologist considered to be one of the most prominent neuroanatomists of the 20th century. He studied the functional structure of the organs of sight and hearing, explaining the function of the retina and the cochlea, and visual and auditory pathways and centers. He also gave a new interpretation of basic visual processes. Here is the quote from Steve Poliak. "Before we work on artificial intelligence, why don't we do something about natural stupidity?"
Are you ready, Goose? Start walking!